This is the Podcast Inc. production. Booyah!
And now, this is the moment podcasting fans listening around the world have been waiting for. Coming to you, not so live, from a listening device of your choice, it's time! Podcasting out of this corner, a mixed martial talker, holding no professional record, he stands at 6 feet 1 1/2 inches tall, weighing in at whatever he feels like, hailing out of Toronto, Ontario, Canada, presenting the sometimes angry, always funny, self-proclaimed podcasting champion of the world, Steve Fingerstyles.
So, welcome to another rendition of the podcast. I am here once again, always again, and joined by stand-up comedian and actor whom you may have seen in The Boys, Star Trek Strange New Worlds, and The Handmaid's Tale, to name just a few. You could listen to his comedy album, Safe Black, on all the major streaming sites. Abbas Wahab.
Thank you for having me, Steve. I appreciate you having me.
No, thank you, my friend, for doing this. It is a pleasure. It is an honor. Can't wait to get into it. Well, first off, I got to know right off the bat, because for people who don't know, you were born in Sudan, but you moved to London, Ontario.
Yeah, I do a joke. It's like going from Islamic regime to roll up the rim.
Oh my God. That's right.
But yes, I did. 6 years old, I came to London, Ontario.
Oh my God. So how was that transition? Like, again, that's like your first memories. Do you even remember Sudan?
Yeah, I'd go back every 5 years.
Oh,
so I don't remember. Nice. I don't remember. I technically didn't move from Sudan. I'm born in Sudan, but okay. My family lived in Oman.
Oh.
Which is borders Saudi Arabia, for 3 years, from my age 3 to 6.
Oh shit.
And then I moved to London, Ontario, first grade, 6 years old. So I remember Oman, and my memories of Sudan are when I went back at 10, when I went back at 15, and when I went back at 18.
So when you went back the first time, how, because again, coming here, I'm sure you don't remember the culture shock, because again, you were so small. And
no, I do. I remember
do?
The culture shock.
Yeah. So how was the culture shock originally coming to London? Because again, London is a small, I hate to say, a hickish, more racist town than sort of like a big city. So how did you cope with all that shit?
When you're a kid, you don't feel these things. You don't realize how, you know, how much of a small white town it is until you leave. So it wasn't really until I went to university in Waterloo and back that I understood. I went from grade 12, 1 to 12, and that's just, you know, where you grow up. That's just where you freaking skin your knee, you hit the jungle gym, right? Sure. You trick or treat. So you don't really have a pulse on, you know, how white it is. Because I lived in a government-subsidized neighborhood that was full of minorities. So I couldn't, you know, I had no idea that I was in the 5%. You know what I mean? I'm looking around. It's all Somalis, right? And Sudanese and Guatemalans and Nicaraguans. I'm like, yeah, Sudan is the U.N., or London is the U.N., right?
But no, that's just hilarious.
Small pockets that you're living in. But yeah, I remember being shocked by squirrels going, like, the first time packing snow happened, and like you could roll it.
Okay.
Just being like, what? You could roll this shit? So those are my earliest memories. And then my first memories of going to Sudan were, at that point, it was hilarious, because at that, I had lived 5 years in Canada. All I knew was Canada at that point, when I was 10, when I went back to Sudan.
Of course.
And I'm living in government housing, but when I go back to Sudan, I am like, they call me what Canada? They call me like the Canadian prince.
So now I'm
in Sudan, I'm like a prince, right?
Gotcha.
Because I'm coming from the first world, but in London, I'm living in government housing. So it's this weird duality of like, Yeah, I guess I'm a prince. You know what I mean? There's eight of us in a house, and we have to lie about how many people are in this house for the government.
That's so hilarious. But it's funny how all immigrants sort of have that same story. Because again, being Portuguese myself, even though I was born in Toronto, my parents came from Portugal, obviously. And it's the same thing. When I used to go back home to Portugal, every time I go, they would think I was like a prince, like I had all this money and shit. And it's not like we lived poor. We were okay.
Four Trans Ams.
Right? And it was like, oh, you're over there. And it's not like Portugal was like a third world country or anything either. It's just everything about North America is different to that side of the world.
Because it's Canada is pretty much, to that side of the world, Canada is Hollywood. That's is America. True. It's the same thing.
That is so true. Yeah, and I love it because you bring it up in your act too about being immigrant and all that. And one thing that you brought up, oh my God, I got to bring it right off the bat before we get into more comedy and I forget, was when you're talking about getting your paper slip signed and forged in school because your parents were so religious. I could relate, and same thing. Every trip I went on, everything I needed to do to sign for school in elementary, I had to get it forged.
Oh my God, till this day, I'll just sometimes sign my parents' signatures till this day. Like I have it down. Just when I'm bored, I have it practiced to a level where I remember the first time was sex ed sixth grade.
Oh shit.
That was the first and last time that I actually attempted to do it legit, where I'm like, hey, we're learning about, hey dad, do you want to sign this for necessary information? No? Okay. All right. And then they take you out of the class and they put you in the remedial room while the whole school learns about reproductive organs.
Oh my God.
And now you're in recess trying to piece together what they learned, you know? Right. So to avoid that embarrassment, you just learn their signatures real well and avoided all those issues from that day forward, you know?
You know, that's one thing I never thought of was even back nowadays, you know, you got face recognition, you got everything, whatever, right? So you could actually see who the person is and their signatures and stuff. But back in the day, what nonsense was it where someone would just sign something and you take it as if it's like Bible? Like, you know what I mean? Like, how ridiculous is that in theory? Think about that.
And they're not even referencing like a master signature.
Right?
Or like that, right? They're just like, oh, that looks, those are some pretty adult loops on that. You know what I mean? Those loops look pretty adult.
It's so true. Then even those people just put an X or, oh yeah, okay, that's the guy who does the X. Okay, you could go through. Like, it's just wild. Hilarious what wild. We do. Oh my goodness. Yeah. So my friend, again, being from Sudan, going to London, when did comedy creep into your life? When did you want to do this for a living? When did the first thoughts pop in your head, my friend?
Well, I'm very religious, very disciplinarian household. So, And I'm one of six. I'm in the middle of six kids.
Okay.
So I'm like in a house where it's like you cannot be loud. You cannot. You just get your good grades, pray five times a day, and shut the fuck up.
Sure.
These are the writing on the wall, right? So when I was at school, I was like living a double life where I was like in school, I would have to get out. I was always a class clown from grade two on, pretty much.
Oh, nice.
Okay. And like just always trying to get out this creative energy just because like I have, you know, 8 to 3 to get this out because I got to shut the fuck up when I get home, right?
Good point, yeah.
So that I loved. And then my parents are very religious, mm-hmm. and but my dad drove cab, obviously. But
he obviously. Oh my God.
yeah, obviously, right? And my dad's very educated. He has an MBA. He speaks 3 languages.
Shit,
he's got an
him.
MBA from Europe. But, you know, when you come to Canada and they look at these credentials, they go, whoa. This guy's good. Give him a Lincoln Town car. Oh, he drives God. A limousine, not a regular cab, you know?
Jeez.
3 languages, give him a Lincoln Town car.
Oh, my God.
So my dad's working all the time, and my mom's, like, holding down the house.
Of course.
And she didn't like, so religious and closed in. Like, mm-hmm. I remember one time I was watching Arthur, and Arthur's dad was leaving for work, and he kissed his mom, Arthur's mom, on the cheek. And my mom's like, what are you watching? What is this?
Shut up.
I swear to God, what is it? Like, in my life, I have never seen my parents embrace, hold, hug, or kiss. Never in my life, I've never seen those.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Like, and you grow up, you're like, this is how immigrants are. And then you're like, no, this is just my dysfunctional house. You know what I mean?
Sure.
You attribute all of these things to all immigrants. You're like, you're talking to your friends. You're like, man, immigrant parents never make eye contact. They're like, what the fuck are you talking about? Like, I was like, oh, it's just, oh, okay, never mind.
It's so funny that you say that because it's the same thing, not to cut you off, But it's the same thing in the Portuguese community where most parents are usually lovey, like a big centric family. You have these gatherings. Everyone cares for each other. Not my family. It's like fiend or be fiend. It's like we all hate each other. Like we don't have relationships. Been doing this for 8 years. My dad doesn't even know I podcast. Like, you know what I mean? Yeah. So it's that. And I couldn't relate to the other Portuguese immigrants. So I'm glad that you're bringing this up because I could relate more to you than to my own actual race at that time.
Yeah, I'm. One of my best friends is Portuguese. His mom knows more about me and my life than my mom.
Shit.
Like, his mom can tell you more about my life. His mom, like, magnitudes more
Shit.
Than my mom could tell. My mom could tell you my health history, this.
Sure, yeah, yeah.
I did. But, like, my mom has never seen me do comedy. My buddy John, his mom's seen me do comedy 15 times.
Probably. Oh, my God.
And his whole family comes out. And he lived with his grandparents. And it's, like, a very – it's, like – they're more regular Portuguese, like, big group. I know his grandparents. You know what I mean? Like,
sure.
But me coming up, it was not like that. So, long story short, my mom was – my dad was never home. He's always working. My mom is very religious.
Yeah.
She's very, like – I grew up watching Simpsons every day, twice a day, nonstop. That's okay. How I learned English. That's how I learned comedy.
Wow.
That's, like, my education in life was The Simpsons.
Sure.
And my mom every day would be like, you better not be watching The Simpsons. No. You know what I mean? But, like, the one thing I could always get away with, because at the time, my mom's English was very weak. It's a lot better nowadays.
Okay.
But I could always get away with watching as much stand-up comedy as I wanted because it's just a guy on a stage with a microphone.
True. And if she didn't understand it, then
she didn't understand.
They could swear or say whatever they want, right?
Non-stop watching Dave Chappelle. Non-stop watching
perfect.
Chris Rock. Non-stop watching The Chappelle Show. And just grew up – and, like – in like 6th, 7th grade in recess, I would just redo. They call me Chappelle. I would redo all the Chappelle Show skits. I had For What It's Worth and Killing Them Softly. I had these specials memorized.
Right.
And I didn't even want to be a comedian. In my,
oh, shit.
I never even thought I could be a comedian. Like, in my mind, you have to be a doctor or a lawyer, or if you fail, a lawyer, right? A doctor or engineer, and if you want to give your parents a heart attack, like lawyer or business person.
Sure.
Right? These are the lesser ones. So in my mind, I was always going to be an engineer because I was like, I don't want to do medical school. It's too much schooling. I'll be an engineer.
That's true.
And since 10 years old, you asked me what you're going to be. I'd be like mechanical engineer.
That's crazy.
10 years old. Yeah, it's just because my parents answered for me. Like, family friends would come over like, what are you going to be? My mom would be behind me, engineer.
Right.
And then you know, you get sold on a dream. So you're in your head like, oh, I'm going to be an engineer. I'm going to be.
Yeah.
So never even thought, although I loved and was obsessed with comedy, I did not have the mindset that I could, an art is a career. These people are born special. They're born different.
Right.
I'm going to be an engineer. I love this stuff. I didn't even have the, and when I worked at Best Buy and KFC Taco, all my high school jobs, people would be like, dude, you should do comedy. I'm like, no, man, I'm going to be an engineer. Long story short, and I say that despite having the longest story.
It's all good, my friend. That's what the podcasts are for.
Long story short, I was born in 91, right? And it was a stormy night.
I know.
But I did engineering. I became an engineer. And I moved to the States to do engineering. And I'm still watching. And every day. For almost 10 years from the beginning of YouTube. YouTube came out in 06. I went into high school in or college in 09.
Okay.
From like around 08 to like 10 for 10 years, we'll say.
Mm-hmm.
Or even from 06 to from YouTube, like dropped for like 10 years.
Okay.
I would watch stand-up every single day because the Laugh Factory had a channel that would put out stand-up daily.
Really?
I'd watch stand-up.
Oh,
yeah.
That would have been sweet.
I'd watch stand-up every day. I would watch stand-up every day. I just loved it. I was obsessed with it. And I become an engineer. I'm in the States and I'm doing engineering for years and I'm so depressed.
Oh,
I'm so depressed and I don't know what it is.
Yeah.
I don't understand what's happening.
Yeah,
and I'm still watching stand-up every day. And then at one point it kind of clicks in my head.
Mm.
At like my lowest point, I'm having like an existential crisis. I am, because like I did it. I got a nice place. I got a sick car. I'm an engineer.
Right?
Why am I so depressed? Why do I feel like shit? What is going on? What's happening with me? Why do I feel like hell?
Mm.
Every day I wake up and I'm so miserable. Right when my eyes open, I'm like, fuck.
Wow.
Here we go.
Right.
Every day. Yeah. And I'm getting good money. I have a sick BMW that I built. I love cars. I'm like, when I get a sick car, everything will be sick. Yeah. Life will be sick.
Yeah.
And it wasn't. And it all went to a materialized to a point where I just, it broke that thing in my head. I was 24 turning 25 where I was like, that thing where I was like, wait, why can't I? Because for years already, when I was at Waterloo for school, I would take all my friends to Yuck Yucks. When I was 19, 20, we'd go to the Thursday night Yuck Yucks.
Yeah.
I always loved stand-up.
Nice.
And so many nights I would see people, I'm like, man, these people are not good. Like, I'm not saying I could do better, but like, if these people are on stage, anything is possible.
Then you could do it.
I put that in my head.
Okay, good for you.
And right then around 24, 25, I realized, yo, why can't I do this? Why can't I try this? Why can't I do stand-up?
Yeah, exactly.
And then I started writing. I found where there's an open mic in Ferndale, Michigan, where I was living outside Detroit working in the automotive industry.
Oh, wow.
And I did my first open mic. Yeah. I died and I couldn't sleep for like 3 days. But 2 weeks later, I went again. A week later, I went again. And then I got the bug and I've never looked back.
And that's funny that you started in the States as a Canadian, and now the end goal is to get to the States for every Canadian. As again, having a ton of you guys on the show, being from Canada, that's where you make your bread and butter. How weird is that? That again, you're starting in the States, but you're a Canadian comic working in Canada.
It's hilarious because I went to after Michigan, I went to San Francisco. I spent a year working in Silicon Valley, where I would do open mics every night in San Francisco,
right?
Every night. I would work in the office all day, and then I'd go open mics all night. And then it was a startup. It failed. I lost the job. I had to leave the country. And when I left the country back in 2017, when I came back to Canada, I was like, fuck engineering.
Don't blame you.
Yeah. And from that moment, I went fully into – so I started delivering. I started doing Uber, delivering, acting, everything just to kind of make ends meet. Like I said, screw the salary, screw all that. But I was talking to a buddy of mine who's who's like my sponsor. So I just got my U.S. visa approved. So I'm actually going to go back to America.
Nice.
Now. Yeah. So I was talking to my buddy who's my sponsor for the U.S. He goes, you're the only guy I ever know that got deported to Canada.
How funny is that?
So I started comedy in the States. And now I feel like, have you watched Game of Thrones?
Yes.
I feel like I've been up in the wall for 7 years
shit.
Now.
That's hilarious.
With the White Walkers. I'm just up here with the White Walkers training. And now I'm going back to like the fucking whatever it's called, Land's End. Or I forget the names. But I feel like I've been training up here for years. And now I'm going to get to go back, not with an engineering visa, but with an entertainer's visa.
Oh, that's awesome to hear. Well, speaking of ends meeting, if you want to support the show and support my fine sponsors, please check them out. First up, First Row Collectibles. Go to firstrow.ca. Use promo code THEPODCAST20 to receive 20% off. They got a ton of stuff from the wrestling world, from all the major sporting leagues, old comic books, old video games, anything nerd culture related, they got it. Best thing is they ship worldwide. Even better, they update daily. So please visit them at firstrow.ca. If you're into video games and books, please visit bossfightbooks.com for great books on classic video games. You'll find titles like Shadow of the Colossus, World of Warcraft, GoldenEye 007, and so many others. Everything you see on their website is available in paperback and ebook format, so please check them out at bossfightbooks.com. And if you want to support me directly, visit my merchandise store at tpublic.com or scroll down on today's devices and better right there in the description. Click on that link, takes you right to the merchandise store. I got everything from hoodies to t-shirts, travel mugs, phone cases, anything you need or want, it is there. But the easiest thing, the freest thing, the best thing to do to support the show is rate, subscribe, review on all major platforms, most specifically Apple Podcasts, TuneIn, SoundCloud, Spotify, and iHeartRadio. All right, my friend, talked about comedy. You also do acting. But before we get into all that, I got to know, you said you watch all these comedians coming up and all that, all the classics, all the legends. Were you into sketch comedy? Like in Living Color and Saturday Night Live, Matt TV, sort of that? That's true.
Memorized on a level I can't even describe. Like, I watched it like school. Like, I watched it with an attention I never had in school, in college, nothing. I cheated my way through engineering school. I went to Waterloo. That's the best engineering school in the country. And the best part about going to the best engineering school in the country is it's the honor system. They go, no one would cheat at Waterloo. They're all high-level people. I'm like, yo, gotcha. This is so easy.
Oh, my God.
All the other schools have proctors, motherfuckers looking right. With eagle eyes. Waterloo is like, a Waterloo engineer wouldn't dare cheat. And I'm like, you dumbasses. Bro, I used to print the notes and tape them to the bottom of the counter of the handicap bathroom.
Shut up.
And then ask to go to the bathroom. Go to the handicap bathroom. Go underneath the counter. Look at all the shit. Tape them back up. Go back up. And I would tell everybody and they would go to the handicap bathroom.
That's hilarious. Gotta love it.
Bro, we did schemes. Like, I didn't even care. All I wanted was the degree. I hated school the whole way through. I was like, when I get money, I'll be happy. When I get money, then I'll be happy, is what I thought.
Yeah, exactly. It's always like that. So you could easily say that Chappelle is your favorite sketch show of all time?
Chappelle Show. Oh, without a doubt. And growing up, there was something called Derek Comedy, which is, he's now blown up, obviously, okay. Donald Glover.
Oh!
So YouTube series called Derek Comedy that we used to watch all the time. And Living Color's before my time. I just see some highlights of
shit.
Them.
But that was my shit.
Matt TV, dude. Oh, I love Matt.
Yep, Matt TV as well. That Matt came a little TV. Bit later. I was already in my early 20s, late teens when that came out. But in Living Color, I was at home. I loved it. Like, every single character was fantastic.
Broke so many people.
I just don't know if it stands up because I have the nostalgic factor. Like, you know what I mean? So when you go back and watch those episodes, do you think they hold up or does it seem corny to you?
No, it does. A lot of them, a couple of these ones with Jamie Foxx are fucking hilarious.
Right? Oh, he was so good.
They do hold up. Some of them do feel corny, but at the same time, I grew up on The Simpsons. And I'll go back and put on some of my favorite episodes, and some people just don't get it, but I watched it 10 times before I turned 12.
Sure.
So they can never have that connection. Like, I watched The Simpsons where, when I first watched it, I would not really understand what's happening because my English is not that good.
Okay.
And then the next time I'd watch it, I would understand more. And what I love about The Simpsons is, till this day, I'm in my 30s now.
Right.
I'll watch an episode I've seen 100 times.
Right.
And I'll hear one new thing that I never heard. That's why it's so dense.
Shit.
The densest comedic writing is The Simpsons.
It's
that
so
season
true.
3 to season 10. Oh, beautiful.
No, you know what? Those were my favorite, again, because I was already in probably my early teens when The Simpsons. No, not even. I was still a kid, too, because what did it come out? 89, right?
Simpsons 89, 88.
So I was 9, 10 years old when it dropped. So I got to see it from year 10 to 20, because then I fell off and it was just too much to keep up. So you're right. Those first 10 seasons,
my God.
Beautiful, right?
With Conan, they had the star writing team. Beautiful.
Right? It was
beautiful.
So good.
The episodes are amazing.
So is that your go-to rerun show to go back to, like in sitcom or comedic?
No doubt, man. No doubt. And like, I've written a TV show which I've pitched unsuccessfully. Nice. I've done a lot of writing. I've done a lot of things unsuccessfully, Steve. Right? But
haven't we all, my friend?
The lesson you get. Have you seen Family Guy?
Yeah, I don't watch it, but I'm familiar with all the characters. Enough people talk about it. Yes.
So why does Family Guy not have the longevity of The Simpsons? Having watched so much Family Guy, and I love Family Guy too. It's a different thing, but hilarious. Family Guy were the people that pioneered the fact that people talk like, if you and I are talking, we'd be like, I actually don't think that. Like, that way of actual talking, they started doing that in a cartoon.
Right.
So then it seems so realistic and hilarious.
Gotcha.
But they do so many cut gags that the through line story, there's no weight on the through line story. It's all about the cut gags being funny. And the reason that I think Simpsons has the longevity, how it has that hang time, like Michael Jordan's in the air.
Right.
It's because it has heart. It's funny, but it always has heart. And I think heart plants it into this, like, there's always a lesson ends with a joke. That's why I'm like, anytime I write something, I keep that in mind where it's like, you can be 100% funny, but if you go 90% funny and 10% heart, it lasts way longer.
And it's so true because, again, that was my incident. Everyone loved Family Guy around me. And I was like, nah, man, I'm a Simpsons guy through and through. Like, you know what I mean? Like, even King of the Hill, I liked a little bit, but not really.
I love King of the Hill.
It's good, but not on the...
King of the Hill was mostly story, and you got to like the characters. But Family Guy, it's minimal story. I mean, that's how it is now. Family Guy had its golden era where the story was great and the cut gags, everything was great. But Simpsons nailed it with, like, the density of writing, The story is solid. It's
the characters, I find, too, for sure. Yeah. You care about them. I didn't care about the Family Guy characters. Like, yeah, Stewie, this and that, whatever, they're funny, but do I care if you were to write one of them off? Not really, whereas The Simpsons, like, even writing off... Thank you.
When Apu lost his business...
Poor guy.
Writing off Apu is the stupidest thing ever. If anything, get an Indian guy to voice him. Hank Azaria is one of the best people to voice, so fuck off with trying to get rid of him. Hank Azaria is the shit. And when Phil Hartman was on the show voicing too, what another Simpsons great. Is the best. But like, when Apu loses his business, you feel bad. When Mo is getting shut down, you feel bad, yes. You know?
It's so true. And it's funny you bring that up because I had Paul Thompson on a couple of weeks ago and we talked about the same shit, how stupid it was to cancel Apu. And again, it was probably some white Karen somewhere in her basement. And meanwhile, everyone who's Indian had no worries in the world about this character.
Not at all. He was the only representation. Apu is a business owner. He's hilarious. Right. He's savvy. He's a dynamic three-dimensional character. He's not like, he's a three-dimensional character. He's trying to get married. He's trying to avoid taxes. He's like,
and he's a player, he's too, like on top of it.
And he's a player. Yeah, I mean, I love The Simpsons. I could talk all day.
Oh, my God. That's hilarious. Okay, well, speaking of TV and acting and all that fun stuff, you've done some acting, my friend. I named it off the top. You've been in a few shows here and there. You've done commercials. When did the acting bug start, and what was your first gig?
When I first got into comedy... Everyone was like, you got to start a podcast. Every comedian's got to act and they got to have a podcast.
Sure.
That's like the lore. Gotcha. All right? Gotcha. So that's literally why I got into acting, because I thought I was supposed to.
Okay.
But when you grow up as a little African kid in a small white town, you become an incredible actor. You know what I mean? Like, right? You become a great actor just by necessity. So I didn't realize how I took the acting so easily. So... In Ontario, they make you take an art in high school. You got to take drama. I took something. Drama. Oh, I killed it. And the whole time I was like,
really?
You know, I was like, the whole time I had this fucked up mindset where I was like, this is gay. You know what I mean? But like,
sure.
Like, that was literally my mindset. But I'm so good at it. But I'm like, you know, I'm gonna be an engineer. I was like cocky. Like, these people aren't gonna get anywhere in life. I'm gonna be an engineer. You know what I mean?
Right.
So I didn't really. I was just like. Conceited and so locked in my point of view.
So performing in front of people didn't bother you either, then? You didn't have that fear?
Oh, I got asked to MC my grade 8 graduation.
Oh,
and I fucking did jokes. Good. And for I was you. Smashing up there.
Good for you.
Yeah, like and looking back, you see the writing was on the wall that you're gonna do all this stuff.
Sure.
But you're just like, this is, you know, I'm just up here making jokes, but I'm gonna be an engineer. Yeah.
Again, back to the engineer.
It all went back to engineering, dude. All went back to my God. So I start acting. I'm booking a bunch of commercials.
Okay.
The reason my special is called Safe Black is because I noticed I started booking a lot of commercials that were looking for a specific type of black. Like, picture me in a cardigan. That's Safe Black.
God. Right? So you're like Carlton.
Exactly. So that's how I was being used on commercials.
Oh,
that's
shit.
Why it's called Safe Black.
Gotcha. Right? Gotcha.
I was like, I thought Safe Black was when a black guy's holding Tim Hortons. You know what I mean?
Oh, my God.
I was like, that's how I get into buildings without the buzzer code. Like, hello? But first thing that broke me was I got a small role in The Boys. No lines. It had a line on set, but they edited it out. When it aired, it was like, the visibility of me is so nothing. For Instagram. I had to pause it, zoom in, and like freeze frame. It was like a CSI, like magnified.
Oh, you know what no. I mean? Like,
just to be like, look.
Hey, you did it.
Exactly. Now, you know, knock on wood. And then the next thing I got was, I forget how the order was, but then I started getting all these little like Children Ruin Everything.
That's another great show.
What We Do in the Shadows. All this stuff, you know, like I've been on a bunch of stuff now, little stuff, I mean, nothing big, but I've been blessed with the opportunity last October to be in my first movie.
Oh, so okay.
That will come out. M. Night Shyamalan's new movie in August 2nd
Shut
called
up.
Trap.
Okay.
I'm a SWAT member with lines in that bitch.
Oh, right? Good for you, man.
Yes, sir. And when you watch Trap in August 2nd, that SWAT guy that goes, hey, where do you guys keep the coffee? That's your boy, Steve. That's your boy.
Good for you.
Shyamalan is so sick, dude. He's such a sick guy.
Well, okay, perfect. We'll talk about him because I'm a huge fan of, okay, I hate to say it because you're in his recent movie, but of his early stuff, of course, you can't, fantastic golden shit. His recent stuff, it's hit and miss. There's some stuff I do like, but there's some stuff, you know, it's like you could tell it's a cash grab. Now, how was it?
I don't want to say anything until I don't want them to edit me out of this movie.
Yeah, no. Your movie's going to be fantastic, my friend.
Let's just say what you're saying is not a controversial statement, all right?
Exactly. It's been put out there before, right? So I'm not breaking news or anything. Now, how was it? Did you actually get to work with him on set while you were running?
Directly.
Oh, fuck. Directly. So how is he as a person then?
Look at my gram. Oh, he's amazing.
Is he?
It was the first time in anything I've ever been.
Okay.
Where the director acted like if you told me what a director, like what I imagine a director was, right. It was the first time a director acted like that.
Oh, really?
Where he was like, no, do not do it like that. Do it like this. And right. I'm like, oh shit, yes, sir. You know what
yeah,
I mean?
Yeah.
Like, everything I've been on, it's always like they focus on the leads and they focus on the very like prominent characters.
Okay.
And I'm always like, hey, do you like what I'm doing? Yo, it's fine. Love what you're doing. Keep doing it.
Yeah, you're like picking your nose or something,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, like, keep doing that. Love what you're doing. And I'm always wanting some notes. I always feel like if I could see the screen of how I'm performing, I'd at least be able to be like, maybe hold the eye contact, maybe something. But everyone is always like very passive, which I never – I'm always like – I want a director to be like, you're doing it. Don't do it like that.
Like almost a like drill sergeant, right?
Exactly.
Gotcha.
That's what I want. And
gotcha.
And first of all, right away, I'm like, you go by M or Knight? He goes, Knight. I'm like, sick. I don't know why that's sick, but I was like, sick. Like he didn't think about it. But,
that's awesome.
But he was like – he told me like he would stop and be like, no. Hold that line.
Yeah, yeah.
Give him two beats on that. He just knew exactly what he wanted. And I was just like, and he was amazing, dude. He's like, he's good. Worth like a couple hundred mil.
Right.
And at the end, I'm like, yo, can I take a picture with you? And he had a blazer. And he's like, oh, of course. He ran back to get his blazer to put it on so he could shake it.
Nice.
Like, you would never know this guy's like a big deal or whatever.
Right.
Like, so down to earth. Knows exactly what he wants.
Awesome.
Never asks anyone's input, which I've worked with other directors. Like, what do you think? I'm like, no, this guy knows exactly his vision.
He has a vision,
correct.
Exactly.
It's a vision.
Yeah.
So that I felt truly blessed and fortunate to even just be in his presence and watch him work because I learned a lot just watching him work.
Oh my God, that's so nice to hear. And okay, so what did was that filming here in Canada or did you go to the States for that?
That was all filmed in. That was right. Remember the strike, the acting strike. Remember?
Yes. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, so he got some like permission to an appeal. He did it all in Mississauga and Hamilton because you know Ontario has a lot of tax credits and whatnot for these big budget films.
Exactly.
So it was all in Hamilton. It was all in a big stadium in Hamilton.
Oh, there you go. So that's how you're able to do it. Okay, and now I got to know too because you said it. Children Ruin Everything. That's a Canadian produced show. You've been on American produced shows. Do you notice a big difference now that you've worked on both sides? That maybe the Americans do it better than the Canadians, or vice versa.
The Americans are just better. Oh my gosh, better, way better, dude. Here's the reality of the bullshit that is Canada. All
okay.
right,
Give
and I love
us.
Canada. I'm
Please.
Proud to be Canadian. But here's just the reality.
Okay.
All right. I didn't book nothing until the boys hired me. Canada, very risk averse. All the money, Bell, all these, it all comes from the government. Everything's funded from the government
in
Canada.
Yeah, yeah.
Where there's a private sector making art in the States, whereas all the art is really government funded here. So I would even though I had crazy good auditions and I did, and I really went out and I was fit perfect,
right.
I never got hired for a role. Until the boys hired. The boys is American.
Yes, of course.
And there was another one, I forget what it was, that I got on before even Children Ruin Everything. But once I got some American things on my resume, then the Canadians wanted me, right? You know, because they need someone else to validate you before they take – they'll never take a risk on you. They'll never take a risk on you.
But isn't that the Canadian way in general?
That's a Canadian. Well, I mean, I didn't know it until I got into this system. Like, I just thought it was a meritocracy. It's not.
But it's crazy,
maybe
though.
I'm stupid to think it was, you know?
Well, I know. It's so dumb that us up here, we have so much talent, and it's shown, but we only are attracted to them once the Americans start loving them. And to me, that's ass backwards. Wouldn't you want them to stay here and be here so then we could have, like, that booming system as well, like the Americans, instead of everyone just always going down there? Like, it makes no sense to me. It's just ass backwards, man.
You're right, but that's one of the few benefits. I mean, there's a lot of benefits, but that's one of the benefits and drawbacks of capitalism. And America's like right. Very capitalistic.
It's of course. Like, yeah.
Get this person because they killed it. I like them. Hey, they never booked another role similar to that. I don't care. I like them. Boom. M. Night auditioned me. He gave me that role off of an audition.
Wow.
I didn't even have to see him or nothing
like
that.
Yeah.
I never got that in a major film here in Canada.
See,
all of these things besides Children Ruin Everything, and yeah. I have to go back and look at my IMDb, but there's like a couple things. Everything else is American.
Yeah, exactly.
Everything else is American.
It's crazy.
So it's like at least, you know, someone is recognizing the work. So I mean, on that level, I'm grateful. I don't want to just be shit talking everyone, but like Children Ruin Everything, it was season one, and I was in episode one for a quick, it's us playing Settlers of Catan, and I have like one line.
I go,
longest road, that means I win, or something like that.
Okay.
That was my line. But it was like, when a shoot begins,
right,
it's always very inefficient versus when it nearing the wrap, it's like, you get your days in and out. Children Ruin Everything, it's like, oh man, I was there 12 hours for one line. It's like, they just keep, but I remember I did What We Do in the Shadows, which I had like, it was like a pretty dynamic scene that I was in.
Right.
And they got me out of there in and out in a working day, 7.5 hours. I have never in my life gotten wrapped in seven in a regular work day, except for What We Do in the Shadows, which keep in mind, they were at the end of their season. So they were like fluid like a machine.
Right. No, that totally makes sense. Oh my, okay, how about this? Any mishaps on your behalf or that you've seen while you've been on set?
You know Giancarlo Esposito?
You
know Gus Fring in Breaking Bad?
I was just going to say yes.
My first scene in The Boys was with him.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, it was him talking to a guy, and I bring them a Fresca, all right?
Okay, here we go.
I'm just a waiter. That's the one where I have to zoom in to see me.
Yeah.
But, like, I never seen this before, but, like, we were shooting in a creaky Hamilton house.
Okay.
And someone was creaking. And again, I don't know what the standards of Hollywood are. I've never seen this till now.
Okay.
But someone, I guess, was creaking during a scene, and he lost it. He exploded in a way I've never seen. It was like, remember the Christian Bale explosion?
Yeah.
Like, you're a nice guy. You're a nice guy.
Yeah.
But the lighting guy or whatever.
Yes.
This guy just went off. Like, he went off. He goes like,
shut up.
Quiet. I thought we were filming. If you're not ready for me, I'm going back to my trailer. And then the director was so scared. He's like, no, we're ready. Please. No
one
move.
Oh, my God.
No one move. He was literally like, oh, my. And I was in the back with the Fresca people. They were prepping Frescas for every take. They're like, oh, my. I'm like, has he been like this the whole time? I was like, what the fuck?
Oh, shit. Oh, my God.
It was so weird. It was like being in the presence of a king.
Right.
Dude, like royalty. And everyone was subjects. And there was so much fear. And I was like, and that was the first thing I ever booked. So I was just like,
oh no.
Keep in mind, that's the first time I'm on a TV set.
Right.
And I'm like, what the? I'm like, is this what this is? Like, what the? Like, I was in the military. Dude, I was spent 6 years in the Naval Reserves.
Oh,
I've
shit.
Never seen anything like
that. Oh my God.
Yeah. I've never seen anything like that. By the way, the acting industry is more military than the military is.
Wow, look at that, eh?
I swear to God, dude. I swear to God. At least you can talk. You can talk to a high-ranking military person.
Right.
And the more high-ranking they are, the more chill they are.
Yeah.
You can, if you're a PA, you're pretty much instructed to not make eye contact with the leads. You're not really interacting with the leads.
Right.
You're not, especially if they're a name.
Yeah. Well, of course. Fuck.
Especially if they're a name. Don't, like, it's they true. Have specific people that they deal with. Don't talk to them. If you're
That's
an extra,
crazy.
You do not go up to the fucking lead and say anything. Whereas if you're an ordinary seaman, you know, which is what I was for, like the lowest rank of private, and a commander comes to the base, you can say, hello, sir. And,
yeah, exactly.
You know, like you can have a dialogue, but you cannot in the acting world. It's more military than the military.
See, and that's what blows my mind about some of these actors who are like big time, as I put up parentheses, is like, How do you like to live in a world like that where, you know, people can't talk to you because of your status? People are like, I don't know. To me, it's weird. I'd be like you, like talking to everyone, like intermingling. Like, why not? Wouldn't you want like everyone's perspective? Like, who cares?
That's why I was so shocked and happy that M. Night was the way it was.
Right? Like, that's so good to hear.
Because I'm like, this guy's like kind of like a little bit like royalty a little bit.
Yeah, well, of course he is. You know, yeah.
Signs and whatever the hell.
Yeah.
So I'm like, oh, you know, he was in his 20s and Bruce Willis is the fucking the lead. How do you even get that, right? And he wrote it too. And it's like, it made like a billion. So it's like every movie he's done is like profitable. So it's like he's a certified Hollywood, you know, whoever you may think about his movies now. So in my mind, I'm like, oh my God, like I'm going to have to tiptoe around this regular guy. I'm cracking jokes at him and he's laughing.
Oh, that's so awesome.
And it's just comfortable. It's comfortable.
Oh my God, that's so cool to hear. How about game shows or being a contestant on a game show? Would you ever want to do any of those or like hosting a game show or being a contestant?
I don't really want to just because I know that's as corporate as it gets.
Ah, okay.
Because the purpose of game shows is peddling sponsorships, right? So it's like,
good point.
There's 1,000 sponsors. So that means you got to stay in the pocket. You got to be like Steve Harvey. Like when I rock my mustache, people just call me Steve Harvey. You cannot be controversial on any level, off air or on air. Like you can't say anything about Steve Harvey. Can't make comments about Palestine. Even if like, what's it called? TMZ. TMZ sees him at Wendy's getting a number 6 spicy chicken sandwich, and they go, "What do you think about Palestine?" He can't say shit because he's gonna fuck up his money.
But you know what? I do give him credit because he does push the envelope with the stupid contestants, and I love that about him.
Yeah, because it's all he does that with those expressions thing. Because that's what he's known for now. It's known for you're gonna give a stupid answer, and he's gonna be like,
exactly right.
He's gonna do his eye thing. I mean, that's kind of the brand that he's built for himself.
But I guess.
I just want to stay away from game shows. I have no, being a stand-up comedian with 100% freedom on stage and an actor, you have limited freedom, but you're working within a larger project, so you understand your role. I don't know about being unless it's a game show on like Adult Swim or something like that.
Or what about like a reality game show where you're like a judge or something like that?
Maybe. I mean, they did Roast Battles.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Roast Battle Canada.
Russell Peters was a judge, right?
Yeah.
I would do that. I have no issue with that. But, like, standing up there and being, you know, PG all day, daytime television, that just, to me, having done years of the corporate world, that sounds like going back to the beast. But those guys, they make crazy money and they don't have to fly. That's what I've noticed with comedians is you break your back touring for 20-30 years,
sure,
and then all the old heads try to get hosting gigs because now they don't have to fly, they don't have to travel as much, and the money is good. So it's just like, it's just a compromise at that point.
I don't blame him. Like, I would love to be Drew Carey. Like, you know what I mean?
I don't blame him. Yeah, I don't blame him.
Right? That's a perfect gig right there. And look how long Bob Barker lasted for. If he gets that longevity, shit.
Exactly. And the better it does and the more of a staple it is, the more your check goes up, right? So you just become like, Steve Harvey's probably making like, I don't know, 10, 20 million plus from these things. So it's like,
right?
You can never really walk away from that money. It becomes golden handcuffs, right?
Well, that's the thing. Yeah, but then again, it's like in your situation when you were the engineer, were you happy? Like, what if that doesn't make you happy, right?
That's why I'll remember the first year from 2017. I went from like 120 grand a year to about 18 grand a year.
Jesus Christ.
Right? And I was like, obviously there was a lot of financial struggle. I don't want to undermine that. I don't want to sell it short. But yo, like from a spirit, and I don't mean a wishy-washy, from a soul, a lightness of my soul and my spirit, it was like I was reborn. It was amazing. That's why, because for years I said yes. Here's my mind. My mind was like an engineering mind. What is the path for more money? Then we go yes. We go yes. We go yes. And suddenly I found myself hitting a brick wall where I made all these decisions just for the soul of maximizing my income. And now I was in a place I hated. I didn't like the people I worked with. I didn't like what I was doing for 60 hours a week. My job followed me home. Yeah. My emails were international from China all night.
Oh, okay.
I was like,
you couldn't turn off.
What the hell is this? Yeah. So now you can't really entice me. Like, you want to stand in the same spot and be in this box, but the money is good. I'm like, I already did the money thing, you know? So it's like, I'm going to do what I want and get to the levels where I feel free and fulfilled. And then, you know, when I'm older and, you know, I've got diabetes, like I'm Sudani, so diabetes is coming for me.
Oh, God.
It's coming for me, Steve. There's no running from it. At one point, it may make a lot more sense. I got a family. It may make a lot more sense. But right now,
yeah,
I just want to keep doing what I'm doing.
No, and I don't blame you. And again, you brought it up too. What you've been doing, you used to host a podcast at the beginning. Now you co-host a podcast. When did you start your first podcast, and when did you transition into what you now co-host called Close But Way Off?
I started my podcast in 2018. It's called The Immigrant Section. The idea was like in high school, we had a section called The Immigrant Section where the immigrants in between classes, they would just go and hang out there.
Right, right.
And like it wasn't even a joke. You would ask like your white buddy. You'd be like, yo, have you seen Ahmed? He'd be like, oh, I saw him in the immigrant section. Like it was just matter
That's
of
hilarious.
Fact. It's called The Immigrant Section.
Yeah, yeah.
So when I wanted to start a podcast, I thought that was an amazing name. And I did 200 episodes.
Oh,
I brought artists. I did artists, comedians, everything in Toronto. And then at one point, I just felt closed in. And I'm restarting a podcast very soon.
Okay.
That's going to be like, I don't know what I'm going to name it yet. I'm thinking a boss cast. I don't know. The name is irrelevant. But like, I don't want it to be The Immigrant Section because I had a lot of great guests that happen to be Canadian comedians that I work with. But like under the theme of The Immigrant Section, it never really fit. So I always felt closed in a little bit.
Oh,
so,
I see. Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Like you're put in a box. So you can only talk about that.
Yeah. Well, seemingly, right? Yeah. I could talk about anything, but random person on YouTube falling into The Immigrant Section, seeming talking to a white guy about the trailer park life, it's kind of, you know, it might be weird. It might be what is this? What are they doing?
Gotcha.
Like if your thing was called The Portuguese Corner and I'm on it, it's like,
yeah, okay, now like, I see what you're
guys,
saying. Yeah.
Are you guys talking about like tarts or like what's going on? Right? Like, but so now Close But Way Off is with my buddy, Jordan Paul Chicchio, hilarious comedian, actor who I also tour with. And that one is just, it's a lot of like movie talk because we're both actors.
Okay.
We're both in showbiz.
Yeah, yeah.
So we just kind of talk about movies, actors, popular culture. But I'm going to start my own podcast similar to yours where I'm just going to be free with it and just kind of have that going as long as I have a staple one like you have, you know, because as a comedian, a podcast is like a really powerful thing. You tell your dates and everything and
Exactly.
And you keep a pulse with your audience, right?
See, and I think that's what's sort of hurting me because I really don't have any other background in entertainment. So people tune in just for the guests. So I sort of realized that off the bat, and it's like, it's never about me. It's always about the guests sort of thing. So if some guests are like, oh, I'm rambling, I'm like, no, please. They're tuning in for you, not for me. Like, you know what I mean? And it.
Oh, you're selling yourself short, man.
No, but you know what? Now that I've had more people on and I'm in like certain different communities and stuff, I do have this sort of like the other day someone approached me on the street and was like, hey, the podcast. And I was like, hey, look at this. Like, you know what I mean?
Hell yeah,
so you know what I mean?
That's a great feeling, huh?
But it's like, okay, but it's all because of the guests too. And I get that. But for you guys, it's totally different avenue because I'm not trying to peddle anything. For me, it's like, I love talking to you guys, like to see the inner workings of whatever you guys are come from, like from the wrestling world, comedy, whatever it is that I have guests upon. And it's like, to me, I'm just like fanning out, sitting in the corner, listening to your stories, right? So...
But
at the same time,
also you've learned your cadence though. You're a great podcaster.
I try.
You know the questions to ask. You set it up correctly. You're selling yourself short. I'm telling you because.
Oh, thank you.
A lot of people will approach me. I don't even do the podcast.
Oh. Wow.
But you drop some names like Mike Rita. I was like, oh shit, Mike Rita did it. I know he's Portuguese too, but like if Mike Rita did it, I was like, oh fuck, okay. You know what I mean?
Oh,
I have
awesome.
Mad respect. That's one of the best comedians in Canada.
Nice.
So like. You have a vibe. You've cultivated a vibe here. And I can feel like I'm looking at, I'm like, whoa, an hour has passed? What the fuck, dude? Like, you've created that vibe. You asked the right questions. You shifted into the right place. I don't think anybody's here for me, bro. They're for you. I'm telling you, man.
At least this episode,
this is not about me. This is you.
But again, this goes back to what you're comfortable talking about. Like, I love all these things that I just mentioned. Like, I love comedy, I love wrestling, and I love video games. Those are probably like my top three. So why would I only limit myself and have people in the video game world or in the wrestling world or whatever, where I could encompass everything that I love to talk about, and it's more of a conversation than straight up, oh, question. Because if people want to listen to that, there's other people who do it and have an actual journalism degree. I'm not a journalist. I'm just shooting the shit with people that I enjoy and like.
And it comes across. That energy is very clear, you know? Awesome. And look, on wrestling, you love wrestling, right?
Yes, for sure.
So I never grew up with wrestling. When I was in Oman, okay. I remember being a kid and watching Yokozuna.
That's all I remember, right? Okay.
But I'll say this, that when I was living in the Bay Area, I went to an amateur wrestling event in Oakland, California.
Okay.
And in that event, right. I understood wrestling immediately.
Oh, really?
Oh my God. Like, these guys were all amateurs, but like were circuit amateurs. Like, they're doing this thing, like they're touring this thing.
Oh, right? So like the independent before they become. I thought you were talking like high school with the headgear and grappling.
No, okay. No. I'm talking about everyone has their merch tables. After
gotcha. So indie wrestling, as they call it.
Indie wrestling, yeah. Yes. Oh my God. Dude.
Okay.
The entertainment. Oh my God. Right? And the hits. I'm right there like, whoa, that's so gotta hurt. This is real impacts. Like, so I didn't really, you know, people go, it's fake, but it's like, you get it when you watch it. And now I understand, like, looking back, now I'm like, I watched Theo Von. I heard Hulk Hogan go on there and Nature Boy go on there. When they talk about this world, there's a lot of overlap between comedians and this, but that's a way more grueling world. That's especially the old school, like WWF and shit.
Right.
What? Like, they're all dead. That's the crazy part.
I know. It's getting better now because everyone, I hate to say it, learning from the past mistakes. Like, you know what I mean? So a lot of these guys are now like literally drug free, maybe not on the steroid side, but like recreational more, because that was the thing to do back in the day. You know what I mean?
Look at Richard Pryor. Look at Mitch Hedberg. Just back in the day, you're a drug addict, you're going to die. Now, half the comedians out there are sober.
Right, exactly.
Half of them are sober. I bet wrestlers are the same, right? Yep. Like, Christian, living a
good life, a lot of people play sober. Video games, so that entertains them instead of going to the bars or going out and cheating on their spouses and shit. Like, there's stuff to do.
Yeah, now they have a cheating game, so just put it right there. Grand Theft Auto 6, you know? Not yet, I guess.
Oh my God. No, but it's true. I see so many similarities between comedians and wrestlers. Again, the biggest difference is that wrestlers take hits and bumps where comedians take it elsewhere via being heckled. Like, you know what I mean? So it's like you guys run your own
showmanship.
Script.
It's full showmanship.
Yeah, and that
they're
too.
Like, they're like, even on the indie level, they're like listening to the crowd. They're in the corner. They're like doing this thing. And the crowd's like, roar! And then it kind of like dictates what they do. And I'm like, yeah, that's like, it's a two-way. It's like comedy. You can't do comedy alone. Who's going to wrestle like that just alone with no spectators? No one really.
You can't.
And no one is going to do comedy alone because you can't. It's a two-way street. It's kind of a conversation, right?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Well, don't be saying that because then you're going to have people trying to yell out and take over your set.
No, but still, like if I do a bit and it goes good, I continue. If it goes bad, I have to address it. Comedy...
I see what you're saying.
They say comedy is music and the audience is the instrument.
Yeah, no
kidding. So it's like you have to respond to what's actually happening in the room. You can't just be up there. Otherwise, you're doing a monologue, right?
That's true. Yeah, exactly. Well, and that's the thing. And I'm sure you guys felt it the most, especially during the lockdowns. Even though you could do Zoom shows, it's not the same shit. Like, you don't get that.
Yeah, that'll just make you suicidal, you know?
Like, can you imagine if comedy was only through Zoom and there was no actual stand-up? There would be no comedians, right?
There'd be a lot more comedians killing themselves, I'll tell you that right now. Oh, shit. It's already a problem. It would triple, sir. It would triple.
Oh, my God. That's hilarious. Oh, man. Okay, before we wrap this up and you plug some shit, what's harder for you, in your opinion, doing stand-up or doing acting?
Stand-up is definitely harder.
Really? In what ways?
Yeah, stand-up. Because you can't fake it with stand-up. Because acting is like...
okay.
Acting, you can... Anyone can act, really. Right? As long as you don't have the fear. Anyone can act. It's the camera that changes everything. If I give you a line to say and the context of how to say it, then you're going to be able to say it. If I tell you, dude, you just found out that you're... wife has given birth and you gotta call a cab right away.
Right.
You're gonna be able to kind of mail, you're gonna be able to get it right. But then the weird thing is when a camera comes in front of them,
it's different.
Then people get weird, right?
Right.
But as long as, and I get a little weird too. It takes a couple takes. You can redo it. Oh, okay, that wasn't good. Hey, have a seat, relax, get him a water. Let's try it again in 2 minutes. Reset. Oh, okay. I liked it. You're getting better. Let's try it again. Oh, I like that. Stay in that pocket. Let's try it again. You do it 15 times. Stand-up, it's like, hey, we're live. Hit me with that line right now. That didn't work. Hit me with your rebuttal, right? It's all live. It's happening right now, right?
That's true.
When the body starts, when you start bombing, the body starts to sweat, and you start.
You can't hide that, right?
So you have to control a million things. Stand up is live.
I was just gonna say, there's no cuts, no edits. Once you get up there,
And you're alone. At least
that's true too. Yeah, yeah.
At least in the thing, on set, you got a team around you. You can look at your scene partner and like get energy off of them. You don't really have that on stand up. You just have the audience and yourself and a microphone, and it's live. And it's on right now. And there's no like you get off stage and you come back after two acts. Like, let's try that again, guys.
Yeah, no kidding. No kidding. And if you're good, you're good. Like, you know, I guess the only one that didn't really translate well from stand-up to acting was, I guess, the infamous Jerry Seinfeld. Everyone talks about, like, you know what I mean? It's like...
he's one of the worst actors out there.
But again, the best top five in everyone's sitcom list. Like, you know, how crazy is that?
The problem is that George Costanza, what's his name? Jason Alexander. Is such an incredible actor.
He is, isn't he?
He's so, you know, like Michael Richards, obviously he's fallen off, but still, like if you look at Kramer for what Kramer is.
At the time, yes.
And you look at Elaine.
Yeah, Elaine was awesome too.
And George is such a strong team around him. That it really makes the weak link visible. That is really the worst.
That's a good point.
That's what made Jerry look bad, is that he's opposite George, who's fully believable. You don't remember it's an actor. And then Jerry says something, you remember it's a comedian. He's literally clearly trying to not laugh. You're just like, oh.
It's so true.
But he's around like theater professionals, so he just looks like total shit.
Yeah, no kidding. Well, Abbas, thank you so much for coming aboard today, my friend. It's been a pleasure. It's been an honor talking to you for this past hour. Promote whatever you want. Plug whatever you want. Floor's all yours, my friend.
Hey, just follow me on the socials and catch my stuff. If you're in Ottawa, I'll be there March 27, 28 at Yuck Yucks. I'll be in Montreal on the 30th of March. I'll be in Hamilton on the 22nd of March. But yeah, just follow me on the socials. I always tour. I'm going to go to... I'm lining up a States tour, so nice. We'll see my inaugural tour out there once I get that done up. But ABBASWAHAB, that's my site, that's my TikTok, my Instagram, my YouTube. Thank you for having me, man. This was an amazing, this flew by, it really did.
Oh, thank you, that's awesome to hear. And for myself, you can find me on Instagram and X under Finga Styles. You can follow the podcast on X, the podcast app. Email us your thoughts, suggestions, comments, anything you want to get off your chest at thepodcastapp@gmail.com. Please rewind to the top of the show, support those fine sponsors. Well, not the top of the show, but somewhere in the middle. Support those fine sponsors, because if it helps them, almost definitely helps me out. And most importantly, rate, subscribe, review on all the major platforms. And if this is the first time you're listening to the show and you want to go back and listen to other stand-up comics coming from Canada, such as Dave Merhege, Mark Little, Jean-Paul, Keith Pedro, Tommy Campbell, Nathan McIntosh, obviously we mentioned Mike Rita, and so many others. So go check out those fine people as well. All right, my friend, one last question before I let you go.
Yes, sir.
What's your dream role or project to work on as an actor?
Oh, dude. Have you watched The Simpsons a lot, right?
Well, yeah, of course.
I would love to be a confident but incompetent lawyer like Lionel Hutz in a TV show.
Oh, shit.
That's the role I want. Like a...
really?
Like a Phil Hartman Lionel Hutz. Yeah. Oh, my God. Like confident but not competent.
Gotcha.
That's the role I want.
Because again, you have range. You're not stuck in a box, right?
Exactly. Like, I rest my case. They're like, that doesn't apply. Oh, case dismissed. That's the role I'd love to have one day. Knock on wood. We'll see.
Awesome. On that note, he's Abbas. I'm Steve. This is the podcast. Peace.